All right, guys, I'm ready whenever you are. Sorry.
Yeah, we're ready.
All right, cool.
Is Ian ready?
I'm ready. I've been ready. I was ready at this prescribed time.
Ian was prompt.
Hey, Ian, how's the baby making coming?
Yeah.
It isn't yet. We have not made any babies, that's not something we're doing yet. Next week we are trying to get pre-approved for a house. So.
Oh, okay.
So that's on the rocket docket first.
I hear you need to get you get those ingredients in the oven before they start to expire.
Okay.
That's what they say.
That's what I hear. At least Brooke appreciated it.
So are you guys a condom family, or are you a chemical birth control family?
Oh, we're chemical all the way.
All the way, huh?
Yeah.
You wouldn't stand for those pesky condoms, huh?
Huh? What'd you say?
You wouldn't stand for those pesky condoms.
It is a mutual not standing for it, or laying down, or bent over, or whatever you like.
Whatever we like.
Our family also agrees.
Yeah. Well, this was an interesting conversation turn. Alright, guys, you ready to start this for realsies, or do you want to do two more personal things before we jump into it?
I don't know. It's kind of a tradition of mine where I make as awkward of a conversation as possible, and then the podcast starts.
Well, you're succeeding so far.
You want to know how old? You want to know? Oh my God! So, two things that made me feel old. While I was waiting for you guys to get here to do this podcast, I placed an online order for groceries for pickup tomorrow. That was what I did while I waited. I was like, Jesus Christ! And then
wait,
I have another.
Where did you do that? Like, what store?
It's called Woodman's. It's like a local thing up here.
Is it like a Whole Foods or like a Kroger?
It's more Kroger than Whole Foods.
Okay.
And I have another story for why I feel old, but I feel like Patrick should go first.
What do you mean?
So Patrick can embarrass us one last time before we start officially?
I thought you were waiting to say something, Pat.
Oh, no. I'm always waiting to say something. It's in my nature, but
well, all right. So my other one has to do. It's a story about police training that made me feel like super awful and old. So last night I worked and I was running traffic, and I was following behind this car, and for whatever reason I was having a hell of a time seeing the last letter on the license plate, and I kept putting it in as R, and it was actually a B. So after, like, all was said and done and did the stop and everything was finished, my trainer was like, so how's your eyesight? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it's fine. It's not perfect, but, you know, not as good as it used to be, I guess. He's like, so I don't know. He's like, so I don't know if you knew this, but at UW, like, you have to have 20/20 vision on the job, or it has to be corrected to 20/20 vision. He's like, do you wear glasses or contacts? And I was like, no. He's like, when was the last time you had your eyes checked? And I was like, well, when I moved here, they did like the vision thing at the DMV. I was like, I don't know what the standard is to like pass that or whatever, but I passed. And he's like, yeah, so you got to go get your eyes checked. So on Monday, I am getting a vision screening for glasses.
Oh, wait.
Like, let's back this train up. And I totally understand the idea that I've had physical eye problems since I was a little kid. And I only recently got glasses, but, like, do you not go to the eye doctor every year?
I have never been to the eye doctor. I don't think ever since I was a kid.
Wow! What is going on? Holy cow!
It's done.
Did your dad think that because you only have half the eye that he does, that he only needs to
I had my eyes checked at my physicals when I was a kid through school. And then once I went to college, like I kept getting, like when I re-upped my driver's license and they did the vision thing, they said it was fine.
That
so I was like,
count.
Okay, I guess that's good enough. And like I would go to, and hell, when I went to the fucking physical for this fucking job, I had an eye test and they said it was fine. And so I was like, yeah, good enough. And then like, but then like, I don't know, like the last couple weeks when I've been like trying to run plates and stuff, everyone's, it's like, I feel like I'm having to squint to see the fucking license plates. And, oh, but there's man. Nothing, but there's nothing more, like, it's not the fact that I need glasses that bothers me. Like, that's not really it. Cause like, every, you know, plenty of people need glasses. I knew I was going to need glasses at some point because both my parents have glasses, but it was very emasculating to have my trainer basically pull me aside and be like, you need to go to the doctor and get glasses because it, your vision sucks.
It might just be astigmatism at night where like the numbers kind of dance a little bit around with the poor lighting.
Yeah, I don't know.
That would be the best case scenario.
The bigger takeaway from this is that Ian has never been to the eye doctor in his life, not that he might need glasses.
I think that the eye doctors, it's not quite like a dentist thing where you need to have to go every year or something like Patrick's making it sound like.
I really do think it is.
But it does seem odd that you haven't gone in like decades.
I mean, I just haven't, I haven't gone in a decade, I guess you could say. I don't know that I've ever been.
Decades, bro. We're older than you think you are.
I don't know that I've ever been to like a specific optometrist. Think about it like this, Patrick. Like, when did you get glasses? You were a kid.
No, that's actually not true at all. I had like a physical eye problem when I was in the first grade and I needed surgery. And so like, because of that, like I had to go to the eye doctor very regularly, but I only first got glasses when I was like a year ago. Well, less than that. I had glasses when I had to learn how to fly because my vision was 25/20 and I needed to be corrected 20/20. But regardless, because of my physical problem, like I live in a family that religiously goes to the eye doctor. And it's exactly like the dentist. Like, you go to the eye doctor every year, and you go to the dentist.
Well, it's not at all like that.
That is definitely extra credit. You should go more often than Ian's, but you do not need to go a yearly thing, unless, like, I don't know, bad vision runs in your family or something weird. Like, anyway, guys.
Yeah, that's my I feel old story for the day.
Well, you are old, you fucking old grandpa.
Oh, God.
Come back to him. He can do better.
Ian, when do you turn 30?
Next March.
Okay.
Yeah, you shut your whore mouth.
Yeah. So Patrick and Richard turn 30 this year.
Yeah.
It's just enough.
So
like,
they're old men.
I'm not, like, when I turn 30, it's not going to, like, magically age me, like, 10 years where all of a sudden all my joints hurt and everything. Like,
I don't know, Ian. I'm getting close to 30, and I have plantar fasciitis. I never had plantar fasciitis in my life before this, and now I'm suddenly on the eve of turning 30, and I've got this stupid foot thing.
You sound like an anti-vaxxer.
God damn it. I gotta wear lumpy soles in my shoes.
Like, all I know is that my kid was fine until he got the measles vaccine, and now he has autism. Like, so, you know, I know what you're telling science.
Are you saying that there's a vaccine I could take that prevents plantar fasciitis?
All I know is that Richard's head is currently set to M for Mini instead of W for Wumbo.
Oh. Let's begin in earnest now.
They made an almanac about that.
Oh my god. Poor. Yeah.
Poor Richard's almanac.
Yeah. Never hear the end of these ones. at least Patrick gets a day named after him. Anyway, guys, you ready to start for realsies?
Yes.
Alright. Welcome everyone to another exciting episode of The League. A mediocre gentleman. I am your host / producer, Richard Martindale, and with me, as always, is Ian Shaw.
Hello.
And joining us by phone is Patrick Weaver.
Automobile.
Heyo.
And inside the same, I was going to say, inside his automobile with him is his wonderful wife, Brooke.
Hello.
All right, guys.
He's knitting right now. case you're wondering.
Don't you get car sick? I feel like that make me car sick.
No, I do not get car sick knitting. Well, actually, I take that back. I only get car sick knitting when we're on really bumpy roads. Today is okay.
So I'm assuming that Patrick's the one driving then.
Yes, I am currently driving.
All right, guys. Let's start off earnestly with all this. Second time I get to use the word earnest. I have a story that I wanted to share, but it's not really a story. It's a, Pat, I told you about it because it was the, I almost railed at my apartment complex for something that probably wasn't 100% apartment complex. But let's start from the beginning. I have anger issues sometimes.
Let's start from the beginning. I was bullied when I was a kid.
That too. But it's a bit... So I have, it's well known, I think, that I flare up with anger at certain, like, really fast. And then I think I've gotten better over the years with cooling down quickly. But, there's still that flare up sort of moments. And I wanted to talk about, kind of what Pat and I talked about in the after shows segment of our, from the after the podcast last time. Where, I just really hate my job. And it's grinding and frustrating.
You too.
Probably. I get frustrated with a lot of my coworkers. I get frustrated with customers with their, attitude of customer is always right is no longer, what started as a complimentary kind of service has now become something customers think is their right to receive upon walking into any sort of establishment. It drives me up the wall, and by the end of the week, I am spent, and I have had it. And working at this place for 3 years now has, at the best thing I could say is it's taught me to no longer let people walk over me. So
is there a shorter version of this story?
That is the shorter version. So anyway, the thing that the apartment complex tried to do was something involving a renter insurance. I don't know if you guys have to get that for your apartment.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Always have.
Yep.
We don't have to have it. We just have it.
Okay, well, it's smart to have either way. When I got the apartment, they made it clear that at least one of us in here had to have up to $100,000 renter insurance. So I was that person, which was smart because I've been
it's
the
only
one.
Only a couple bucks a month, right?
Yeah, it's not expensive. I think it's 10 or 11 bucks a month or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I got it. It's been fine. It's auto-renewed itself every year, and it's been easy peasy. Basically, once I got it, it kind of just, kept itself running on its own. This year, for some reason, the apartment complex notifies me that, hey, it looks like your renter's insurance is about to expire. And I was like, well, that's weird because you've never notified me this before. And I'm pretty sure it's going to renew. And I checked, and it had already renewed. And so I sent them the paper, and I was like, here you go. Paper sent. It's all good. And they looked at it, and they said, yeah, but Eric Lopez no longer lives with you, and we'd like to have him taken off your renter's insurance. And I was like, okay, that's an odd thing you need, but, fine, I can do it. It's my name's still on it. The apartment's address is still the same. But sure, I'll take it off. So Liberty Mutual is the one that does my renter's insurance. And there's probably a good reason for this. It's not the easiest thing to take a person's name off of the insurance. You need to have that person confirm it, or you need to prove to Liberty Mutual that that person no longer lives at your apartment. So it took about a week and a half to 2 weeks to get them to finally remove Eric's name from it. And the apartment complex said, well, we need to get your new roommate. Taylor onto the contract or the thing. And I was like, listen, it's already fine. My name's correct on it, but I'll do it anyway. Well, during this whole time, the apartment complex has this thing saying, hey, if you don't get this done, you're going to be breaching contract and we're going to fine you if you don't have your renter's insurance completed in the amount of time. I had already proved that the renter's insurance had not expired. All they were looking for now is to get their ducks in a line and to kind of have everything kind of match. It comes the next month, and they have it so it says, hey, you owe us $30 as a fine for not getting your renter's insurance done time. And literally, it was, that day when I got this notification that Liberty Mutual had finished, adjusting everything and putting everyone's name in order. So I'm pissed, and I walk down to the apartment complex, and I tell them, hey, you said this is that I already proved that no one was on here. Take this off and kind of fix this a little bit. Here's the proof of, I actually had hard copies. No more emails this time. They're like, okay, fine, we'll do it. At least that's what the lady said. Come several weeks later, last week, I get a notification on my door saying that that I have $30 not paid to the place yet. And I was at this point, it was the end of my week, my work week, and I was just livid. And I wrote, like, a lengthy email about how, like, I have proven over, like, multiple times. I actually started the email off with, I am writing in this thread so that you will be aware of the dates in which this original email was sent to you. That this contract was resolved, that this registered insurance was resolved at this time. And I just go down this whole list, and I think I throw the word criminal in there and underhandedness multiple times into this, like, email. And I'm just, like, fuming as I'm writing it up more and more and more. But I'm writing it up as I'm outside, like, on my cell phone with my dog. And there comes a point where I'm like, oh, I gotta go inside. And I'm like, this seems like a good time to not send the email, and I'm gonna go back and review it later. So I pocket it, it goes to the draft section. I go inside. I, like, you know, cool off. I have dinner. I sit down and I play a game, a very cheap JRPG game. It's called Trails of Cold Steel. I just got it the other day. It's a silly kind of a game. I don't know if it was the game. I don't know if it was the time. But I gotta tell you that just, like, walking away for it for, like, a couple of minutes, like, diffused it. Like, all of a sudden, I was more engaged with the game. I was having a lot, like, I wasn't really thinking about it. And thank God I did, because later, a couple days later, I still hadn't sent the email. It was like, I was thinking to myself, like, oh, I'm really gonna, like, look some things up, and I'm really gonna, like, really get in at this, and I'm gonna start quoting the lease on him, and I'm gonna get the paragraphs. Like, I'm preparing something here. It's gonna be bigger than anything. And so, the next day, like, one of my other roommates goes, hey, did we miscalculate the rent? Because I'm looking at the bill thing, and it shows that the renter's insurance fee is indeed listed there, but it's also taken off right underneath it. And I looked at it, and I looked at it a second time, and I go, you know what? It looks like they literally took it off the same day, and it was so fast that when I told you to pay your rent and to leave off $30, that was overcorrection onto something that had just been fixed literally within 5 minutes of that me texting that to you. So luckily, I never sent that email. Because that would have been really dicky on me to be such a jerk to people. Like, needless to say, walking away and waiting to review an angry email and just playing a video game kind of helped me cool off and not be an absolute asshole to someone who was just doing their job and had done it well enough.
So my first question involved in this is actually to Ian. So, like, I feel like as men, that sounds really...
really sexist, really, right off the bat.
Really cliche.
What is a man?
No. Like, I feel like a bundle of insecurity. Like, as we grow up and we kind of deal with everything that we have to deal with as men, like, it's one of those, like, anger and testosterone and all blah, 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 blah. It's something that we all kind of have to, like, get over in that whole idea of growing up. And I'm really curious from Ian's perspective, as he's become a police officer, how he's dealt with just dealing with, like, the assholiest of asshole people, and at the same time not, like, flying off the handle.
Yeah, how do you work the switch, Ian, when you turn it on and off in terms of when to be angry?
I mean, policing, like actually doing the job, like, when I first started, I would say that things that people said on the job would bother me. But I don't know if it's just because I've gotten older or because of experience, but it's very, 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 very uncommon now, at least for the last several years, for someone that I'm dealing with to say something that gets under my skin. Like, it's very... to the point where I don't remember the last time that something that someone said or did get under my skin, because at the end of the day, I know that it's not personal. Like, you know, they're pissed off because they're being written a ticket, or they're being arrested, or they're drunk, or they're assholes, or whatever. But, like, they're not attacking me as a person because they don't know me. They're attacking the fact that their day isn't going well for them. And
right.
Like, you know, whatever, like, you know, I'm part of a system. They're part of that system when they're dealing with me. And it's just two people doing, you know, going through the system. So, but I don't know, when I first started, like, things that some people would say would bother me and stuff, like, that would get under my skin. But it's like, I don't know if it's a product of getting older and, like, that toss, like, that those, like, you know, hormonal whatever is, like, and pride and stuff is a little less, the more that we, you know, get the more we age, or if it's just because of experience where you're just like, yeah, like whatever, you know, I don't really care what you think. So I think it's much more common for me to be bothered by something that one of my coworkers says than by something that a member of the public says.
So, and that's kind of, so for me personally, it's really what I was getting at is that I call it the, like, the hills to die on concept.
Hey, and, I love that concept.
Yeah, so like a couple of years ago, and through most of my young adult life, and I think both of you will attest to this because you've known me for forever.
I think I know where this is going already.
Is that like, I mean, I was very concerned with like being absolutely right or absolutely wrong. And I would let literally anything that I felt was some miscalculation of justice or me being turned the wrong way or anything like that into this like huge issue. And I would be getting really, really upset about it. And then at a certain point a couple years ago, I just was like, you know what? This really isn't my hill to die on. And that's really been my moral philosophy ever since. It's just like, as I'm listening to your story about the apartment,
yeah,
like I can definitely feel your frustration, and I can relate to your frustration, but at the same time, like halfway through your story, I'm like, eh, like they're just like lazy bitches at the apartment office. Like that's literally nothing more than what that is.
Oh yeah, well,
and it's just not my hill to die on, and that's what I said in my mind.
Yeah, no, I normally, at least for a while, I've been doing very much of this like, is this my hill to die on? Is this where I make the big deal? Like, because you only get a couple of these big deals that you can make out. And do I want to make this more serious than it really is? Is it as serious as I'm about to make it out to be? My issue had been that the apartment complex has done a whole lot of weird stuff along those, like, little things, nicks and dings along the way here, where, like, you know, they took away our gated community kind of a thing without ever adjusting any of the money that we're paying for them. They have decided to, like, not upkeep a lot of the fences and, like, the dog park and the grounds and everything. The parking situation has gotten worse and worse, and they've seemingly actually made things to do, like, for it to, it's actually made it even worse than it was before. And the other day I had one of their towing companies come by and like slam a sticker into my like windshield for my car to let me know that my inspection sticker had expired, which I had already known, and was more upset that there was a giant sticker now stuck into my window.
Wait, like your state inspection sticker?
Yeah, the state inspection one. So basically,
I'm so glad I lived in.
Yeah, so it was like these little nicks and dings, and like whenever I brought these issues, whenever I brought an issue like one of these things up to the apartment person, the main guy in the office, I don't know exactly what his full title is, we'll say manager, he would never admit that it was a problem that was caused by the apartment, but would more blame us for bringing to light that this was an issue. Like, how dare us point out that his system has flaws in it. And that was the issue. And so when I got into this rental thing, it was now at this point where, like, I had gone back and forth very politely with this guy for something that ultimately probably did not need to actually be messed with, especially considering that now 3 years have gone by and I've never had any trouble with this, and now suddenly this is the time when he wants to make a big deal about it and threaten that I'm in violation of a lease and also a $30 fine. Which $30, not that big of a deal. It's the violation of the lease and like this weird threat of it all being like slammed at me that was starting to irk me. And the constant emails that would keep coming in, and I'm like, hey, I'm working on it. By that point, and by the end of the week where I had been like basically kicked around by the county's public at work, just, you know, having to take in animals when we're already full, listening to people make up excuses because everyone's moving and everyone's pregnant, so that means that they can't have their dog anymore. At this point, I was like, that's it. This is, like, I've had too many people walk on me. Whether or not this is as important as it was important to me at this time because I had to finally say no to something. And I was like, I cannot keep being pushed back and pushed back. And I was like, I got it. Like, yes, it's only $30. But it's the principle that matter. And if I don't say no here, then I'm going to just keep letting more money get sucked from me and more, like, stress being right. sucked from me. So that was the issue. Luckily, I did not actually show up to that hill to die on it. And it ended up being the right choice because of the fact that it would have been 100% my mistake at that point.
Good job, Richard. I'm glad you didn't piss off your apartment complex so that they do something. And it's
I know that was the other thing. Like I think I delayed it as well because a thought occurred to me, which was like, of all the people to probably piss off and burn the bridge of, maybe not do it to the person who still lets you live at their of property.
Yeah. So you wanna see what I had to deal with today? I'm not trying to one up you at all.
No. Bring it on.
This literally happened today, and it's worth mentioning because the topic came up. So, like, we went out today with the dog and everything. Well, like, we took a whole bunch of stuff down to the truck. Well, Brooke took a few bags for me, and then I was taking a bunch of boxes behind her. I walk out, and I look down, and I'm like, what the fuck is that smell? And I look down, and I've already mentioned how hot it is here today. It's very hot. It's high summer. And somebody, I mean, I know exactly who it was, but somebody, their trash, like, split open as they were carrying it down the stairs.
Oh, jeez.
And I mean, it's all open air. Like, it's not, there's no indoor. I mean, it's 105 degrees outside, and there's, like beef and beans, like rotting on the stairwell.
Oh, gross.
Red beans and rice. There's yeah. This jambalaya.
Oh.
That was already bad yeah. in their fridge.
Yeah.
It's now on the stairs.
Yeah, just that's like gross. Cooking there. And
that's gross.
I was like, okay, I guess we got to use the back stairwell to bring the dog down so she doesn't try to eat whatever this is.
Yeah. I've been there.
Even still, it's like the scent carries with you. Like out to the truck, it was awful, and like we called the apartment complex when we got down there because they're in on Saturdays, and we're like, hey, we just want to let you know, like, I don't even know how you would deal with this, like you get somebody with a power washer, I guess, and they're like, yeah, there's really nothing we can do now, like we'll let them know and they'll come out on Monday.
Oh, that's so long away.
This evening when I get home. Yeah. I will be getting 5-gallon buckets of water.
The hell you will. You will not.
You will not, Brooke. No.
You will not.
So, that's the interesting thing. Do you dig your heels in and be stubborn that the apartment complex should be the one to do this? Or do you let yourself suffer while at the same time you suffer through this horrendous smell that you could at least alleviate a little bit away from you? That's the conundrum.
Saving grace is you cannot smell it from inside the apartment. It's only like if you go outside.
Okay.
No, I would say differently if you could smell it from inside the apartment, but because you can't, I think you just, you know, just let it be. Don't, because...
Ian and I are on the same way.
If I can Interesting. Smell it from inside, though...
That's different.
Yeah, if you can smell it inside, all bets are off.
That's different. I'm not asking you to sit with a gas mask inside your own apartment.
Hey, it'd be good practice.
So I know we pushed off like meaningful fantasy content for long enough, but really, really quick, because I thought you guys would get a kick out of this. So I had to transport somebody to the hospital last night for alcohol poisoning.
Yeah. And it was Dan Heron.
Who wants to guess what the final, because we PBT'd her at the scene, but it was like a really, really weak sample because she wasn't compliant. And so who wants to guess what her final blood alcohol content was when they drew blood at the hospital? And it was, just to give you a ballpark, it was easily the highest blood alcohol content that I have ever seen in somebody.
What's the typical average again?
0.24.
I'm going to go with
0.24.
Higher.
0.78. Higher than
0.24.
0.78. Well, Richard, it's not 0.78.
Why not? Why not? 0.78.
No, it's not 0.78.
0.3. 0.32.
Higher.
0.45.
Wow.
Higher.
0.6.
Really? No,
higher.
I had 0.57. All right, 0.68.
It was 0.61.
Oh, I was.
She is
I don't think that's possible.
Well, that's what the doctor said. She is an alcoholic, homeless person who had been repeatedly turned away from the detox center because they were tired of dealing with her. But even so, like, she was conscious. Like, oh my God. Was talking. Like, I've never that was easily the highest alcohol content I've ever seen in somebody by a long shot.
Yeah. So you've seen that show on TLC. Like the detox show. What is that show called? I don't know. South Park did a parody of it, which is all I can remember, where with Cowley detoxing and like the intervention.
It rings a bell.
I cannot remember it either, exactly.
The show that used to be on TLC like a decade ago, because I'm an old man. And like, they would go.
No, you're an old woman who watches TLC.
No. They would go around with addicts and they would like do interventions and stuff.
Yeah.
And so like
my grandmother loves those shows.
There was this lady who would drink like a gallon, literally a gallon of wine a day. And like, I mean, she was an older lady, but like her body just got used to it. And like I don't want to know what her BAC was.
I don't want to know what her headache is like.
Yeah.
Jeez. It's like Archer, he's like, I'm afraid that if I just stop drinking, the hangover will kill me.
Yeah, her blood alcohol content was higher than the proof for most liquor. So.
Yeah.
You could get drunk off her blood, vampire style.
She'd be alive.
Her blood, yeah. You could get drunk off of her blood. If Dracula attacked her, he'd be wasted. So.
I want to see wasted Dracula.
So, you know who else is wasted is Bryce Harper in the Phillies.
The fucking Phillies, who lost again today. They are in an fucking tailspin. They've lost freaking 6 games in a row now. Like, they're 5 games out in the division. It's a nightmare. Like, it's an absolute nightmare. It's been a week since we won a game.
Ooh, yep. Tough times.
It's ever since the Braves series, like things just are now in a well, and it's not entirely like most. I would say that at least half of the fault goes to injuries, because we have like David Robertson's out, like most of our half of our bullpen is injured. Losing McCutchen was bad. Losing Odubel Herrera because he can't not beat the people he cares about was also bad.
I'm going to beat the love into you.
having Segura in and out has been bad. It's been pretty rough with the injuries, but we were for a while there, I was like, oh, we're performing better than I would have thought given the injuries. And then it was like, all of a sudden it was like, all right, well, that's all the good luck that we've got. Like, we're going to play shitty now. It's like, oh, okay. So, and then Aaron Nola just like turning back into a pumpkin has been brutally bad. So, I don't know. It's not looking good for us because McCutchen's gone for the whole year. Robertson hasn't thrown a pitch since the first week of the season. Like, it's the bullpen is absolutely a mess. So, I don't know. It's looking pretty rough right now. Five games.
Do you think it's...
It almost sounds like you're overreacting a little bit.
Yeah, do you think you have anything to fear from, like, Washington coming in after you? Or
worried about. Like, the Braves are playing really well right now. And traditionally, the Phillies the last couple of years have faded down the stretch. So I was kind of hoping that we would build up a lead to buffer that. And that's all of a sudden not been the case. So it's going to depend on, I think, unless if Nola doesn't ground back into form and if the bullpen doesn't get healthy, then I don't think that we're going to make the playoffs this year. But
well, how long do you think Colorado is going to stick around in the wild card talk here?
I mean, well, it's
Colorado's pretty good.
It's kind of an academic
decision. I mean, I feel like I feel like there's always that year where we keep saying Colorado's pretty good, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, yeah, we all knew they were going to fade.
I mean, this is an academic discussion because like if the things that I say need to happen don't happen, even if we get a wild card spot, we don't have an ace to throw out there for a wild card game.
Like, Aaron Nola.
We've got Aaron Nola's he's not an ace right now. We'd be throwing Zach Eflin out there, and I don't trust Zach Eflin. So, you know, it's...
Hey, so I was watching the Phillies-Marlins game this afternoon, believe it or not. And the Phillies had this pitcher whose last name is Hammer.
J.D. Hammer with the glasses?
Yeah. He looks Susan like thinks 16, he looks so... but he's got these huge glasses.
He's got these, like, 80s glasses. Susan hates him. Like, she thinks he looks ridiculous.
He looks like he's 16?
He looks like he's like 18. Yeah, he looks really young, but he looks... I like his look. I think it's cool.
I think he looks like a dweeb.
Susan hates it.
Susan hates it. He only wears those when he pitches. I wonder if it's because he gets like... if it's just like an intimidation thing or an image thing.
I don't think that's an intimidation thing.
It's a wild thing, right?
Yeah. It's probably a wild thing.
It'd be more entertaining if he would pitch better, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, a guy with the last name Hammer, if he's not pitching well, it just becomes a weird sideshow.
Do you know if he's Jewish? Because Patrick's...
Because
then he could literally be it, yep. Wikipedia already has honed in on this. Apart from his pitching abilities, Hammer is known for his signature black big-frame glasses, compared by the press to those of Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn of the movie Major League.
All right, this is all I want to... I don't want to talk about the film. Can we talk about something else, please?
They suck.
They really do right now.
Yeah, well, since we're talking on baseball, Pat, do you want to just slip right into fantasy trade talks, since it's been an interesting week of will they or won't they with Zach Greinke, with Richard Zach Greinke?
I mean, we could. However, I'm like 90 seconds from home where I can get on my headset.
Uh-huh.
And the fun part about this is that 45 seconds from now, I'm going to lose you because I get no service like on the road right before my house.
All right. Well, we can.
I could start talking about this and then lose you and then come back. Or you could talk about something else and then I could jump in.
How about this? We take like a minute or two break. Everyone
like
smokes.
A commercial break.
Yeah, like a commercial break if we were actually sponsored. That way I can edit it out. And then Patrick can get his headset sequenced in. So,
well, now you don't explain the process. You just say,
"It's all
back after this."
It all.
You can cut it whenever you want.
Yeah, I can cut whatever I want. I have the power here. So I drink a lot of coffee, and like a addict, I like to have a lot of espresso coffee. So I'm going to recommend Cafe Bustelo. I just want to remind everyone that we are brought to you by this. But not sponsored by this, because we don't receive any money from these guys. We don't do any kind of business with them. This is just a pure recommendation to pass the time while somebody gets their headsets in order. So, Cafe Bustelo comes in espresso cut already, or espresso blended, so that way you don't have to waste your time doing it. It tastes great. Or at least it's marginally better than all the other kind of coffee blends out there. The price, you can't be beat. It's like only a dollar more, 36 ounce, than the Folgers out there or the Maxwell's. Folgers isn't that bad. It's Maxwell you gotta stay away from. And you can stay away from it with Cafe Bustelo. Cafe Bustelo, because if you're not drinking it, you're not drinking coffee. And if you're not drinking coffee, you're not awake. Anyway, guys, I think that's about all we have time for. Everything should be in order. Let's get back to the show. Goodbye.
Richard, you winning this
week? You went what?
Are you winning this week in fantasy?
Yeah, in both my teams or both my leagues, much needed winning in the paid one. But for ours, finally getting a decent score against a team that, you know, I should be winning against. I think I've had a lot of really bad, it's 9-3 right now. A literally bad luck where, like, I mean, listen, Joey, if you're listening to this, your team isn't great. I appreciate what you do with your team. It's getting there, but like, it's still not great. My team's great. It has no business losing against your team, especially with how much it lost against that team. It's just like, for those listening, and I'm sure Patrick will jump in on this once he joins in. Last week, I had the lovely moment of crisis hit me when I looked and saw I have not like. To preface this, I have not been checking the standings that much this year. There's usually a certain point of the time where I will start focusing on the standings, And so last week was when I finally started looking at the standings, and lo and behold, I was in second to last place. And crisis mode hit me suddenly, because I did not think I was that far down. I knew I wasn't doing, like...
It is halfway through the year.
Yeah.
How did you only just now check the standings?
Because I didn't want it to influence my decisions. I wanted me to...
It's halfway through the year. It should have been influencing your decisions before now.
Yeah, you tell me. You tell me that now.
I mean, you've been doing this for 10 years.
Right? So my gut reaction was... Well,
there... You know you're turning 30 this year?
Hang on, you are extremely loud. I do know I'm turning 30 this year, and you know, I'm not looking forward to that at all. I'll actually be turning 30 in Canada this year.
I did hear about that, yes.
I'll be celebrating my birthday in another country.
Not just in another country, fulfilling the like strange sexual fetish of an 18-year-old.
No.
Is this her birthday present to you?
No. Yeah.
Well, you read the thing about how Richard is watching her play a game.
Oh my god, it's the other way around.
No, she's watching him play a game.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is millions of people on Twitch suddenly have a fetish?
It's a private Twitch stream, essentially.
Oh. That part is true. But it's more like when Ian, you and I watch. Oh my god. It's like when Ian, you and I watch like a TV show in sync or something. Like we do the same, like Neve and I do the same thing with like movies or TV shows or YouTube videos and stuff.
Wow,
it's just
what we have was special, but I guess not.
It's, yeah, it is. Of course, I will always remember our time.
It doesn't sound like it, Richard.
I will always remember our time together. But getting back to fantasy for.
Yeah, fantasy. So we're halfway through.
So I offer a trade to somebody in our league. In an act of, well, there's my season, it's over. I guess it's time to blow it up and to start really, like, let's go for the players I want. And I go for a Walker Buehler on James's team.
Yep.
And he is a little hesitant. So I offer him, or rather, he tells me the kind of players he likes on my team. And my response is, well, shoot, I will give you all three of those players for Walker Buehler, who he did not mention was even available for trading. And he sat and he said... Well, what do you think about Noah Syndergaard instead? Could that work? You got like at least two quality years left of him on to keep. And I looked at Noah Syndergaard, who had just gone on the disabled list, injury list. And I looked at his numbers for the year, which did not look great still. And I said, I will get back to you. and I have not really gotten back to him since, because the whole thing left a bad taste in my mouth. And also... after talking to Patrick as well, it sobered me up quite quickly in terms of maybe I don't need to dump this. Like, to get the contact, I offered Gary Sanchez, Daniel Murphy, and Zach Greinke for one Walker Buehler. Oh, no, Walker Buehler and a Buster Posey. I was going to get a catcher out of the deal just to kind of fill the slot in. But essentially, it was a 3-for-1 deal that he was just probably going to, you know, never use Posey or drop him, or who knows what he would have done with Posey. But, like, that was just a throw-in, was Posey. So that was where I was in this fantasy year. And now it's become, after talking to other people, an interesting little, like, dating sim of who will get Zach Greinke, because I've actually just got approached by Heller now for Zach Greinke. We'll see.
So my opinion on this has really shifted
over yes.
the past 72 hours.
Whoa, really? 3 days?
Yeah, no joke. So
I feel like I haven't talked to you about it in 3 days, so I'm actually curious to see what you say.
Since we last talked, my opinion has shifted.
Alright, so wait, can I just say the offer from you was Daniel Murphy and Zach Greinke for Tyler Glasnow, correct? At least that was the beginning parts of a trade where we were we hadn't really gone much further than that, but that was the start up of it as a counter. Already a better deal than the one I had offered James.
Yeah, I'd say so. So initially, and I really, the whole point of doing this segment about trade value in our league is about me arguing with myself about things that are fair.
Okay.
And I kind of mentioned this to Richard a couple days ago about how, like, it really does bother me internally that we're kind of selling ourselves for these first round pick guys it just feels so dirty because you're getting these guys for essentially nothing. You know, giving away players like Walker Buehler for James, you know.
Yeah.
Or like the Nolan Arenado trade also to James.
Both of these offers to James, he did not actually come up with these ideas. I do want to at least give him some credit that he didn't have the gall to start this off, but he did accept both of them, or he accepted one of them.
So that's my thing, is that we look at value from an outside perspective as an absolute thing. Like, oh, you're getting back this much, and you should get back this much because this player's worth this much, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And I think all of that's valid. Like, there's nothing wrong with that at a glance. But at the same time, when you're a team that knows that you're bad and that you don't have a chance this year and you need to improve, like, you essentially become fixated on individual players. So for example, like, I'm kind of at a teetering point where I don't know if my offense is going to make it. And that's why a couple of days ago, I asked when the trade deadline was, because I didn't know how long I could wait. Well, if I become a seller, then I'm immediately going to become a team that is solely looking to who I want to keep for next year. So this is not somebody I'm targeting, but I'm just going to give a quick and dirty example. Okay.
Go for it.
Like say I wanted Vlad Jr. Okay. And I wanted to build my team around Vlad Jr. Like he was my guy, or Walker Buehler, like you. Okay.
Yeah.
If that was the case, I would approach James for Walker Buehler, or Mark, I think, as Vlad Jr. And I would say, hey, I want this guy. Who do you want? I'll give him to you. Like, it doesn't matter what the deal is, because if it's not in the six guys that I want to keep, then I'll give him away. Like, I will give you Rendon, who's the number two third baseman this year. I'll give you Paul Goldschmidt. I'll give you Yasmani Grandal. I'll give all three of those to you. You know, just for this one guy that I want to build around.
Right.
Know? Because who gives a shit? Like, at least from my perspective, who gives a shit?
Yeah, like, that was my perspective as well. Like, I was never going to keep Gary Sanchez. I was never going to keep Zach Greinke, and I didn't plan on it. And I wasn't going to keep, I definitely wasn't going to keep Daniel Murphy, who was kept in the second. Like, I was just, I was like, listen, these guys are not part of my future.
Right.
Buehler could be for a very long time, because I need to find some replacement for Kluber, who for years has been degrading and now has now inflated to a price I no longer can afford to keep him at.
Right. So if that's your guy, then that makes a lot of sense. But so it's a frustrating concept from an overall league perspective, because if I trade, let's say for Walker Buehler, like if I trade Goldschmidt, Rendon, and I don't know, like from my own team, like Goldschmidt, Rendon, and I don't know, like Jack Flaherty or something.
Yeah, that sounds about equal to what I kind of offered.
For Buehler, like, that might get James to trade him. That would be a win, in my opinion, for me, because then I get to replace essentially Flaherty with Buehler on the keeper list for next year. But if I'm not James or my team, if I'm like Heller's team or Ian's team, I'm looking at this and I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me?
Yep.
Because James' team immediately gets ridiculously better.
For very little. Yeah.
Okay. And it just really rubs me the wrong way. And like, and I feel like if James has any kind of moral compass, like he would feel as bad as I did last year when I was doing the same types of deals. And I don't know. Like, how do we reconcile that? Like, how does value shift and change? Because I can't say that your initial deal to James for Buehler, honestly, at this point, I can't say that it's a bad deal, because you're right. Like, if you want Walker Buehler to build your team around, he's a legitimate candidate to do that. And well, why not? You're not going to keep those guys. But at the same time, I mean, especially after the Arenado trade and the trade that you're proposing.
Yeah, it would be basically a
runaway favorite.
Yeah, I would basically hand him the keys. And so that's where I was last year with some of the traits between you did some of this, but honestly it was once again James getting a lot of interestingly lopsided trades, some of them actually turning out well this year for the people he traded with, but very much so the same problem came up. And the idea was thrown around temporarily was, is this a moment where we expand the league manager's veto policy of, is there a moment where you need to consider, hey, you have almost, you've traded a lot more quantity-wise. Like, somehow you found a way to make quantity its own quality in a game that's supposed to be all about quality. Is there a moment where you should say, you can't trade half your team for one guy? Even though that's what the guy wants to do, and he totally is in control of his own choices, and the other guy obviously was okay with trading one guy for a good chunk of these players. Is that a reason to step in as league manager and say, it's not that you guys are wrong. It's not that I think that I should be involved in this trade. It's not that I think that this guy's getting an unfair deal. I am stepping in because of the fact that you are being unfair to the league at this point, where you have now shifted the power so much in one fell swoop.
Right.
Without having any discussion of actual, like, balancing that trade in terms of...
I think there's a third option here.
I would love to have a better option, because I don't want to use the league veto.
I don't think so. I don't want to do that either. Like, I think that's not a great idea. I think that a third option, which sort of indirectly could hope... I mean, you know, it's hard to predict, right? Because people are unpredictable and do their own thing. But something that indirectly, I think, affects the trade market, particularly in our league, is that our trade deadline is very late for fantasy baseball.
Yes.
Because you think of it like, it's the same day as the real baseball trade deadline. But you got to think that in real baseball, they have another month of regular season play. And for us, it's a month less. So we actually, our trade deadline's like a month before the postseason, if that. So that's really late. I think, and by that point, it's pretty solidified. There's really the whole point, like one of the whole strategic elements behind the trade deadline is deciding whether you're a buyer or you're a seller. And
finally getting people to get off their seats and make a decision.
What's the thing? By that point, you pretty much know.
Yeah.
And I think that a soft nerf to what's going on right now might be to bump the trade deadline earlier by like at least a month.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. Yeah,
I really don't think so, though.
Finish.
No, I don't know if the exact. I mean, yeah, I think that's going down the right trail, though. That's the kind of thought process.
Think of it. There are only two direct ways to address this problem, like aside from just changing it from not a keeper league anymore, because a lot of this is derivative of the fact that this is a keeper league.
Right, because the value of the rounds start to really. Like, mess with things.
Also, people rightly or wrongly are going to start making decisions based on like next year. So, like, the only direct ways to address this are, one, to give Richard expanded veto power, which I don't think is a can of worms that you really want to open.
Not really.
Or two, you start kicking people out of the league for perpetual mismanagement of their team, like somebody who. Like you can prove a track record of like they sell every year and they skew the playoff race and they're always bad.
Yeah.
Which is also not really a road I think we want to go down.
Because it could
poison the well of enthusiasm in the league.
Yeah.
And so like I know that this isn't like a perfect solution and it's indirect and it may or may not affect things, but it takes a couple teams that are on the like fence about whether or not they're competing or not. And it makes it a more difficult decision for them about whether or not they're going to sell. So hopefully this stuff happens less often. So if you just bump the trade deadline, make it earlier by like a month or more, like it could, it's not going to get rid of this problem, but it could make it a little less.
Yeah. Like I think it could. It's just that I don't feel that this issue would solve the Arenado trade.
That's the issue I'm having is that
potential trade. Like your solution, while might make things less drastic in a month, would not prevent the Arenado trade from happening, nor prevent what Richard's trying. Like, I mean, I'm telling you right now that
because Arenado was in May 25th was when the Arenado for Matt Chapman and Pete Alonso amount of Trey Mancini, sorry, occurred. And at that point, like, you can't just, like, slam down, like, that's the date, or even earlier than that. Like, when I first saw that, I was like, wow, that's really early to be selling. But, like, to consider yourself out of it. But, like, if a team does that, I can't stop them, and I don't want to, like, escalate by saying, like, each year I drop it back another week until I think I've hit the soft spot, until suddenly it's like you only have a month before trades are done. That's a snowball fallacy right there, but I'm just saying.
I want to take the devil's advocate, though. Or it's not really devil's advocate, it's just slightly the other side, because of the Pete Alonso trade, okay? Like, that was, at the time, that was just, oh my gosh, it was mind-blowingly, we need to kick this guy out of the league type of trade.
Yeah.
So, like, but let's remove the names here, because Pete Alonso has sustained pretty well so far this year.
He's actually gotten hotter.
Right. And so, like,
same with Matt Chapman, to be honest. Although Matt, he's not hit as many home runs.
Like, let's say that Pete Alonso becomes the best first baseman in baseball next year.
Yeah.
Okay. And we know that 100% for a fact. Like, are we okay with somebody trading a top 10 first baseman for the number one third baseman? Okay.
I think that. Because this kind of harkens back to when Richard with the Dan Heron trade.
Yeah.
Hey, good times.
Where, at least so far, it appears that the trade is fair because of the results.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because Alonso, over the last 30 days, has like 9 home runs and is batting .300. So he has at least hasn't yet fallen off.
Right.
But I think that it's also that we got to be careful not to fall into the fallacy of just because you have a 1 in 10 chance to succeed, and just because you might have gotten the one doesn't mean you were correct. Like you could still be wrong. So, and I think in this case that was still wrong, even if Alonso manages to sustain the production for a little while longer. So,
well, I agree from a logic standpoint, but we still bring up the Dan Heron trade.
Well, this is exactly why, but we learned from the Dan Heron trade, because none of us argued for the trade to be vetoed. We just, like,
told you. You rallied. You guys rallied.
With the Richard thing, I thought we learned our lesson pretty thing with Dan Heron, because it ended up being like a trade that ended up being would have been even. It would have been fair, but. Like we got it vetoed, and like I think that was, of course, wrong, and we learned from that. And with this situation, nobody was asking it to be vetoed, so it's just, you know, how, aside from being better about letting people into the league and like trying to make sure that they're not bad, I mean, I don't know what you do. Like, we can't force people to do things a certain way. I mean, we could chastise them and embarrass them all we want after the fact, but I don't know what.
And we do willingly.
Well, but see, there's the flip side of that too, because Max is no longer here, and he never really got to see the fruit of his labor.
Yeah.
But like I told Richard privately, like, Max was the first person to do this.
Yep.
Where he was just like, I want Mookie Betts. Like, I'll give you anybody. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm not going to keep any of these fucking losers. Like, I just want Mookie Betts. And he would give, like, 4 All-Stars or something on his team just so that he could keep Mookie Betts in the last round, because he knew that Mookie Betts was going to be a superstar. And, like, it's, like, how can you argue with that? But like, B, you know, he properly built a team like the Astros did.
Yeah, basically ejecting everyone and then getting quality.
You know, like I said, he didn't see the fruits of his labor because he ended up leaving the league. But like, but still, it's just like he did it. He did it in a way that we're currently arguing against. Like, he would see ultimate success because of that.
I think what's a better comp to this is like how we reacted to in-season trades of next year's rounds as like placeholders or whatever. Like, when you would make, and this harkened back to, I did this, and I think Patrick was the first to patent it, but like, you would trade I would say like, hey, I'll give you my third round pick next year for Prince Fielder straight up. And and like someone would do that. And you basically got Prince Fielder, back when he was Prince Fielder, all caps, and for like literally nothing that year. And right. That was the issue. We ended up saying, like, all right, you can't do in-season trades right. for this because we don't have as many moving pieces as the MLB. We can't afford to do this kind of a right. thing. So it kind of feels something similar where you have these like prospects now that are suddenly, because of their keeper value, even though they aren't like, so they might not 100% be performing right now, or they're just starting performing, but like you're basically taking established, well, with great track record, like top players, multiple of those guys, and trading them for one prospect. And so someone's getting a ton of stuff for extremely little right now. And that's the issue, is like, is there something that we have, like, I don't know how to like put a similar kind of rule in, like the in-season, don't trade your rounds in season, but like, is that the real crux? Is like,
there's nothing that we can do without either, like, if you go too hard on it, like saying that like it has that each trade is reviewed for balance by the commissioner, then I think that's too heavy-handed
and way too much work for me.
But there are other things you could do to try to disincentivize tanking, but then like that also could have the added effect of like driving people who don't usually do well in the league away from it.
Right.
So, like, because like if you're trying to, you know, say, all right, like, you know, these people are just, you know, they're just trying to stockpile prospects for next year, and then when they'll inevitably fuck it up and lose again anyway, like, so like an indirect way to try and disincentivize that sort of strategy would be like, okay, if you come in like the last three teams in the league 2 years in a row, you lose a keeper for the next year.
But
you just know that that's going to, the first time that happens, like whoever it happens to is going to pitch a fit and they're going to quit.
Yeah. So, that's the issue, is like, how harsh do you want?
So high anyway, I mean, at the bottom of the league.
So it's the thing. Like, I mean, you know, like it's also, I mean, we also have to look a little bit at, like, you know, how often these trades actually sway it to the point where a championship is won or lost on it. So, like, because, like, last year when I made that trade with Max for Kershaw when I got rid of Aaron Judge, like, that was pretty controversial, but it didn't
win
the league. Yeah. So, like, it's...
I got Arenado and Altuve and Verlander.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there was that like escalation, like power chasing sort of thing. So it's like, it's hard to know. I don't know. And I don't know that this is a thing that has a solution to it, to be honest. Like, I really don't, aside from just trying to make sure that we get good people for the league.
So you know what the weird solution is, actually? I was thinking about this.
Service time.
The solution is making us a dynasty league.
So go all in on it. Yeah.
Like, what Max did is exploiting the best parts of a dynasty league, where like while still maintaining the redraft concepts. Okay, right?
Right.
So like, and that's why, and I have posts to prove it. That's why like Ian was posting on Facebook in August of last year or whenever, saying, I'm totally mortgaging my future on this trade because I want to win this championship so bad this year. You know, like, and at the time it was true if we were a dynasty league, but we weren't.
Right.
Like, yeah, because Ian and I both knew that all of you guys are fucking stupid.
And here we are again. There's right. no reason I should be in first place right now. No.
Right.
After last season,
yeah.
after what I did, I got rid of fucking everybody, but here right. we are again.
Right. And I mean, like, I mean, I'm in sixth right now, but I feel like I should be a lot higher. Like, I, like, there's no reason why I should feel so happy about my team.
Well, Pat, you and Thomas and James are kind of like trading spots, it feels like, every week, where you're within striking distance of playoffs, pretty much.
Right. But bottom line is that because we played it like we're a redraft league, but we convinced everybody that we're a dynasty league.
But
But we're like, hey, you need to keep this guy because he's going to be great. He's going to be great next year. Well, who gives a shit? You're only keeping six guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you can come up with six guys off the spin of a hat and then draft everybody that you gave up.
Well, yeah, that's
what we did.
That's what I learned pretty quick when we first started out as a keeper league, because I had the idea like, oh, I'll keep a bunch, like keepers should be prospects. So I'm going to keep Desmond Jennings and Brett Lowry, and they're going to be great because everyone says they're going to be great. Where are they now? No one knows. They're not doing anything. And so it's, yeah, you don't want prospects. You want good prospects. You want low value players that aren't even prospects, but are that you picked out of the waiver wire that because no one else saw them improving and now you hold them on forever. Yep. So that's, yeah, the only tragedy would be losing, like the draft day is for most people, I think, a pretty fun time to, like, it's one of the more exciting parts of the fantasy is drafting your team. So,
well, you still have draft day even with the dynasty.
Well, okay, that's true.
Way smaller.
Yeah, it's way. Oh, you telling me that we'd be able to finish draft day in an actual, like, reasonable amount of time?
Well, no, it becomes one of those things where James's current team becomes unviable next year. Like, Ian's team last year and my team last year, like, we would be in last this year. Because we wouldn't be able to keep all those players at the same round. All these other teams know that they already have all of their own players, so they don't have to like have to trade for the scraps of the first round like they did leading into this year.
Yeah.
And so like we would be highly punished for the strategies that we took. Now, James might do it anyway because he's never won a championship and he needs that elusive championship.
Now, but see, like, James holds himself back because he still wants to also have his cake and eat it too, and he'll try to also have the future as well as the present.
That's the thing, is that like that's a choice he'd have to make. And so it's just I think that's my vote. If we're saying we're not going to expand veto powers, if our best idea to prevent these Arenado and Bueller trades is to move the trade deadline earlier, which isn't going to solve anything, I think we should become a dynasty.
If we were to go Dynasty League, and not to go off into the weeds now and talking basically our league's goofy rules and perspectives as if this is a team meeting now, but like our inflation system, would it stay the same? I feel like we would almost want to tweak it a little bit because of the fact
I'd keep it the same,
or you'd have to look up what systems work for other dynasty leagues,
money,
and decide
budgets,
because there's a lot of different, because that's a thing, like dynasty is like a broad term for a lot of different formats. So
yeah.
you'd have to make sure. But first, like, you'd have to see if there's even an appetite for it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I would want to look up the stuff first.
For it. If most of the league isn't for it, then it's an academic discussion anyway, because you can't force it on them. So,
well, that's the thing. Like, it not only can it be a solution, it has to be a simple solution, because there are some people who don't want to have to think too much more different than they already are. And it's going to be...
There's a secondary problem of, like, because you just know that the marks of the league are going to say, like, well, like, if I had known we were going to go to a dynasty league, like, I might have made different decisions, blah, 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 blah. And so it's like, then you're looking at, well, we're going to dynasty several years from now, or we're redrafting.
That would be, yeah, I think at that point, you would almost have to do a redraft league.
You have to redraft.
Yeah.
Like, I think... It's almost.
It would be the only thing that would be fair, because there are certain teams that are very much ready and able to start a dynasty like league tomorrow, and there are teams that are going to need massive amount of moves between like now and next year or something just to start getting into that kind of a zone.
Well, and let's just be honest here: the only reason we're having this hour long discussion anyway is because a team other than the three of us is benefiting from strategies that we've benefited from in the past.
And let's also remember that
we're trying to change the league.
Let's also remember that, like, I actually did not go through with the Bueller trade. So, you know, more calmer minds did prevail. So,
well, yeah. I'm just telling you right now, like, if this continues come the middle of July, like, if I'm really feeling that because of the Dick Mountain injury, and if Glasnow doesn't come back, and if Mondesi's groin doesn't improve, and my offense doesn't turn around, I mean, I'm going to be calling Ian, and I'm going to be picking the player that I like the best on his team. And I'm going to be like, hey, I'll give you Goldie and Rendon and whoever.
I'll give you my Dick Mountain.
And then that's going to be a thing.
Like, yeah,
it's going
to like, and I mean, it might not be Ian, it might be Heller, like, but whoever, like,
whoever it is, it doesn't matter.
Well, shoot, Pat, if you need Pat, if you need hitting, I've got too much hitting.
Oh God,
my pitching is in the tank.
I'm well past my time when I needed to go, so I'm going to head out.
I believe Ian, you said it was going to be 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock your time.
Oh, that well played, Ian.
You rat bastard. I think we should do part two and talk about games, because I want to hear Ian's thoughts on games.
Okay, yeah, I'm fine with wrapping it up here.
Wednesday and do games?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Let's do Wednesday and do games, and it'll make this an easier podcast to edit. All right, cool, yeah. All right, guys, Ian, thank you so much.
Part two.
Stay tuned for part two. Wednesday. All right, bye. Cool. See you, Ian. All right, Pat, this was fun. Yeah. Well,
so I gotta eat dinner, and yep. Do you want to play Diablo, or you doing the fetish?
Let's. It's not a fetish. It sounds like I have not heard from Neve today, so it looks like I am free and clear. So I could do some Diablo tonight if you'd like.
Okay, if you can give me about an hour for dinner.
That's fine. Yeah, I gotta do some stuff over here, like letting the dog out and whatnot.
Sure.
All right. Cool deal. All right. Thanks, Pat.
Yep. It's fun.
Yeah. Bye.